Morning, folks. This is Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're live at 102.9 FM, whistlefm.com, formerly Whistle Radio. Sharing the Burden believes in life recovery. We are a life recovery group, and we follow the 12 steps of sharing the burden to support the hurting. All are welcome at our meetings. We hold weekly meetings in several locations. Check out sharingtheburden.ca to find the meeting closest to you, or start your own. And we need one in Stouffville soon.
A couple of very interesting guests this morning, and I'll introduce them to you. The first one is Laura Cusack. Laura is just from a couple doors down. She runs what's called the Hummingbird Hub. And I'm not going to tell you a lot about it. I'm just going to introduce our other guest, and then I'm going to get Laura to tell us what Hummingbird Hub does. And she knows exactly how we are trying to be a fit, and I believe we are a fit for what she's doing. And we'll let her tell you all about that in a moment. The other guest is Jeff West, who has been on several times. Jeff is not only a friend, but he's someone who also attends jails and does a great job with that. So we'll be talking about that and lots of other things. Let's start with you, Laura. Tell us a little bit about what's going on at Hummingbird Hub and how we met and all that kind of stuff and where you're going to go with that whole concept of, you know, bringing things together.
Well, good morning, Scott. Thank you for inviting me to be here this morning. You're welcome. Quite an honor. The Hummingbird Hub is designed to be a neighborhood house, which is a place for the community to be who they are. So it morphs into whatever needs to be at the time, whoever walks in the door. So everything from programs for musicians and artists to programs for children, for PA Day programs. But behind all of the programs that are running, it's space for rent, so anybody can rent it and do workshops or seminars. There's some really good ones coming up. But what's behind it is the more we can do to create the space, the more we can do to help the people that come in the door that are working with trying to struggle with their burdens, trying to find a way to get a helping hand, to get to the next step, to be able to move forward in their lives. A lot of people struggle with what life has to offer, and it transcends gender, socioeconomic status, age, culture, transcends all of those things. Life happens. It does. And when it does, sometimes it's very difficult to know where to start. And so what the hub is about is trying to find a place for people to come in and find a starting place so we can then channel them into the program that's most appropriate for them. Whether it be sharing the burden, they can come in on a Tuesday morning and talk to you, or they can come in and find some other program we can arrange for different people to come in to provide support systems for people. We connect them to, there's a lot of different programs, a lot of different spectacular gems in our town. Some real talent in terms of being able to help people. We can route people to food banks or to drives to get to the food bank or to doctor's offices. We can get them connected in any way. We're looking at trying to bring 360 kids to town to have a night stop program permanently here as well. A lot of those types of things that can kind of run in the background so people can come in and find support for whatever they need. So the way your program fits, it actually is kind of a main part of the foundation for what we wanted the hub to be, is a place for somebody who, a facilitator who can guide people down a path to get them to the next level and get them past something that is stopping them in their tracks and preventing them from living their life fully.
So long and short, anyone with a burden, we'll say, and we all have burdens, and you know, we're called sharing the burden, of course. I think it's a great way to stream people like what you're doing, you know, and you're definitely a resource center. In many cases, we're just that. We're a place to kind of settle down and get a good handle on where you're at, what you need, in terms of emotion, mostly. That seems to be, you know, our stronghold is, you know, listening to people and giving them that safe place to speak, to be heard, to not be interfered with, to actually be able to have uninterrupted expression, which doesn't sound like an awful lot, but in today's world, I'm sure you all know, if you open your mouth to make a statement, there are many people very close who will tell you what's wrong with the statement, what's right about the statement.
Particularly if you make that statement on social media. Yes. But sometimes being able to verbalize what's going on is the first step to being able to fix it, and to having a safe place to be able to verbalize that, where you're not going to be criticized, but you're going to be supported, is really important. And it's a really rare thing to find in our world.
So support mechanisms, in a sense, you know, as well as educational functions, are kind of like the mainstay of the hub, right? I mean,
it's the backbone. Okay. It's what we need to do. We need to be able to find a place for our community to be able to come together, do things that are that just bring the community, connect the dots, connect the gaps, bridge the gaps, and find people that are kind of stuck in the gaps, and help pull them out and get them to a place where they can move forward in their lives.
Beautiful, beautiful. Hmm. It's interesting too, because Jeff, who you've met before, has been on the show a couple times, several times. But this morning, when I talked to him, he said, I was going to stop by the hub today on my way probably to Newmarket, if I know where he usually goes, and I have these candies left over from Halloween, you know, and maybe they can make use of them. You know, I thought, it's good that people are starting to think, you know, that way. I mean, he's good at that, a lot better than me, but he thought right away, well, there's a place, you know, you go there, you see different people coming in, and, you know, a little chocolate bar once in a while goes a long way. You know?
Sure does. We also usually have some food there, so if people need to come in just for something to eat or a distraction for things, so there's usually a pot of soup. Every Thursday, there's always a pot of soup on for people. And you often in between that as well. Right now, there's a pot of soup that was from Sunday's open mic that's in the fridge that can be warmed up if somebody's hungry. But there's usually food, and there's you're not the first that has leftover Halloween candy, that rainstorm kind of kibosh.
I need to get rid of it from myself, or I'll eat it all.
We can be our own worst enemy sometimes.
Yes.
So is everybody welcome at the hug?
Absolutely, everybody's welcome.
And any time, as long as you're open, sort of thing?
If the open sign's on, you're welcome to come in. Okay. And the one caveat that we have is we have to suspend judgment when we walk in the door. And a lot of our volunteers, we've done a lot of training with them to be able to learn how to suspend their judgment, because people walk in the door that are very different from ourselves sometimes. Mm-hmm. And just because they're different doesn't mean we can judge them for that. That's not our role. It's somebody else's job to judge. But sometimes people just need to be able to feel safe and welcome, and then they can be who they are.
Well, perfect. Wonderful place. And I like the, not only the ambiance, but the feel there. It's a good place. You know, some would say I'm talking nonsense, but I've been in so many different places and with so many different kinds of people. I know when a place has a nice feel to it, and the Hummingbird does. So
I'm sure.
And obviously the leadership is comforting. You speak well, you speak softly, and you don't sound like you're going to beat anybody up. You know what I mean? Like even people in, we'll say Jeff's old job, or one of the first things he thought he'd do in life would be a pastor, and tried that for a while and so on. But even in that life, you know, he could have been one of those guys that took a Bible, for instance, and started beating everybody with it until he would beat it into them. And, you know, we know how well that works. But anyway, Jeff, while we're on the topic, you're one of the people who goes in regularly, sometimes with your wife, sometimes with me, into the jails and into the jail systems. You've been in several, and you've been with me several times, and you've seen several kinds of people. You've been in, you know, protective custody areas with me, and, you know, in some pretty special places, like the unit where we actually do the meeting in their range. And folks, if you understand jail work, you don't get to go in the ranges. That's off limits. But for some people, and especially in this women's institution, we're able to do that. And it's, you know, to go in and really be with them, you know, in every sense other than in the actual cell with them, because when they're in the range, they're together. And when they're in their cells, they're usually locked down. It's either time to sleep was there a problem in the institution, which there often is, and so on. But mm-hmm. Jeff, your experience, like over the last year or two, I don't know how long you've been coming in there now, but it seems like a couple of years maybe. Mm-hmm. What's your sense? What are we doing? Are we getting anywhere in there?
Well, it's always fascinating. And the irony is actually that as many times as I've gone, which is quite a few times, I've never led the actual meeting, mm-hmm. which just sounds odd, right? Because whenever I go, it's either with you or my wife, and both of you, either or, lead the meeting. And that's really what I like. I don't really want to lead a meeting, even though it's formatted and it's fairly easy to follow. You know, basically there's some articles that you just read through, and then but it is completely formatted. And so for me, I could do that. I mean, it's spelled out. It's just that I don't, and I'm not really interested in doing that. I like being in the meeting, and that way my mind's off of the data, let's say, mm-hmm. Because I can get very fixated on just the content and finishing it rather than focusing on the people. Mm-hmm. And so really in this scenario, in a jail, you're not in a cell, you're in an open room. And it's very, not my typical environment. It's actually very concrete, literally, mm-hmm. Because you can't have anything that could be even a pen, really. You're not mm-hmm. supposed to take a pen in. We don't take our phones in. Mm-hmm. Really, the cell phone stuck to me most of the time, and I'm looking at it a fair bit. But there's no contact with the outside world in that sense. In fact, the doors are locked from the inside. Mm-hmm. Or outside, I guess it is. Yeah. So we don't even get out. And there's cameras. Yeah. So if you concentrated on that, you'd be very distracted. But I don't. And I actually somehow miraculously don't think about those things. And so you're waiting for these women to come in, and whoever they are, it's just an open call. Yeah. We don't go get them. They come to us. And because the guards have some favor with us, or we have favor with them, they seem to realize we aren't there to hype the women up, let's say. We're there to calm them down. Yeah. And in fact, that happens regularly, I think, when we hear things have happened on the cell block or whatever. We will actually be a voice to calm people, mm-hmm. because the content of what we have is like that. And so I find that I can actually concentrate on each of the women. I don't know their names. We never even ask what they've done or why they're in there. Mm-hmm. That's not part of what we do. So we just actually go in there and love and care for sometimes people I may not actually typically walk up to mm-hmm. be a friend with. So I find it just, it's you're in a locked in area with women, and they're just going to follow the format. Some of them know the format, some of them are new to it, and it doesn't matter who they are, they actually start interacting with what we talk about. And because I know what we're going to talk about, I just want to try and attach to the person. Mm-hmm. So there could be anywhere from 2 to 12 or more in a room. Mm-hmm. And so the more there are, obviously, the more personalities are there, mm. and they're completely different ages, different ethnicities, different, you know, every kind of background. And so it's impossible to literally know them in that moment, but it's a spiritual thing, and you make a kind of a spiritual connection. I do, and I want to. And so that is, for me, is I guess the base of it. And so I just listen to whatever Scott or Trish are talking with the format, and then hearing each of the women, or some of them don't say anything, and you just try to connect somehow to what their situation is in that moment or at that time.
Yeah.
And somehow it works. It does work.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, you've mentioned several times, and I was going to get you to go into it a bit, is how we'll take say 8 or 10 ladies, in the case Jeff goes into a female institution. We also cover a couple of male ones, but this particular one is where we're most successful, so it's a good one to talk about. But you've mentioned several times, we go into a room and it can be a scattered bunch of people, you know, with usually with mental illness too, and there's not too many people involved with you know, drugs, alcohol, different kinds of problems in this, emotional problems in this world, that don't have some form of or combination of you know, anxiety, depression, and so on. You know, whether it's bipolar or a depressive issue or an anxiety issue, they all are mental illnesses, and you know, and rarely does an addict, for instance, not have one. So, but we go, and they're all different, and they can have many different mental illnesses, and in some case, you know, really serious, and they're all totally different. Yet, after half an hour in our meetings, they all seem to tune in. It doesn't matter why or whatever or what the power is or how it works, but to see these ladies who are, you know, they might even hate each other, but the funny thing is, after about half an hour, we've got a tuned-in crowd, and it's wonderful. It's just so comforting, and they are comfortable, like really comfortable, and you know, they go from, you know, trepidation kind of thing to real happy bunch of ladies, you know, and when they leave, they're happy, you know, they want to hug us if they can get away with it, you know. We're not supposed to do that, but we quite often do. But anyway, and you've mentioned that, is that that's you described that for us as someone who's, you know, hadn't been doing it for 100 years, but you know, how does it all work?
Well, yeah, because you don't really, we have zero idea who's showing up in a each time. It's and sometimes we've had two meetings in an evening, so we'll have one group, small or large, and another group, because we finish one quicker, and because sometimes they go out for meds, they have their medications. I personally don't like having it at the time when they have meds, because some will not come back, and that it's an interruption, and they're listening to that over the intercom, and then sometimes I think it makes them docile, because they're literally taking altering medication. Maybe getting them ready for bedtime, right? And it's only 8 o'clock. So it actually interrupts a flow. But lately that hasn't happened so much, I've found. So that's good. But really what they do, they come in, if there's a really anxious one that is there, kind of bouncing around a bit and walking, and they tend to leave. So the disruptive one naturally leaves, because somehow they know it's they're a disruption, and thankfully that one may go, and it leaves the others to, they'll usually make a comment about that, and then they'll get back to what we're talking about. So it makes it better. But yes, they, you know, you just have, they want to be there. Literally, we show up and they say, you guys didn't have to be here. They, some of them actually get that. We don't go with that intention that, oh, I'm being compassionate, I need to go and meet some people that need some help. No, I go because, actually, if I think about going to a church study where they're sharing, there's less sharing in a church study from my perspective and my history than there is from this. These women have nothing to hide. We know they're in jail for a reason, but we don't know what the reason is, and I don't care. And so they will just open up. They just share themselves. Sometimes way more than what I thought they would say, but let them, each one has a turn, or they take, we're trying to let more of them jump in, but some dominate a little. Usually they're very, amazingly, they'll even cry. Some of them cry in a meeting. You're in jail with women that are in jail, and they'll, some one or two will cry, and one will cry in compassion with that one. And so I think, wow, I'm in a, not a study, it's just a, this is a sharing time, and it's usually biblically based, spiritual, and so they open up, and we, that's what we ask, that God would help them open up during that time, and you know, we say God shows up. They actually say things that, you know, they say they find God in jail some, and it's true. I didn't know. I just thought that was a hokey thing before I ever went in. But it's kind of, it is true. I think there's some that actually want the devotional and the Bible. And they study them, they write in them and everything at in their own time, like when they're going to bed or in the morning or who knows what. So they're actually getting I don't want them to get indoctrinated, because then all of a sudden you become a scholar, right? And you, you talk about the stuff of the scripture rather than the the underlying help or the emotion of it, you know, entering into it. And so that's what I like with this. It's actually, we're trying to work at a heart level, not a head level.
Well, you know, it's interesting, the point you bring up there. We were taught more or less to go in and make a difference in some people's lives. You know, that's sort of what people think. But what I've found out lately is those people loved me before I loved them. They really did, you know, and that was profound for me, because I thought, well, it's my sense of loving humanity and so on that goads me to, into going into these places, you know, as well as losing my boy and that sort of thing to a fentanyl overdose some years ago. But, you know, that drove me in a different direction. But the actual, you know, in this step, this is, you know, we're seeking some sort of contact with a higher power, God in our case, you know, through prayer and meditation, and you know, trying to get a conscious contact with that God. But when I see love coming from you know, so clearly, and it's funny, I said this to the girls the last time I was in, to one of the ranges there, and I said, I couldn't believe it, but for some reason, I know you guys loved me before I loved you, you know, and they're all doing this, you know, they're all nodding their heads, and I'm thinking, you know, this is really true, it's not something in my imagination, you know? And I'm wondering, well, why, you know, but no reason. That's what I mean. No reason. We have no reason to be there. They have no reason to really be in our meeting, and they don't have to come. Yet they're there, and we're there. And, and except for the odd exception, as Jeff mentioned, you know, there's always a either an instigator or somebody who's more ill in this case than others, and they will, you know, left to themselves, bring on problems. But they seem to just weed themselves out and get out of there if that's the case. So. Fascinating stuff, you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think with some of them, well, many, we go in, we don't try to help them. As Scott has always said, we're not doing crosstalk. We don't try to, someone shares their predicament or situation. My temptation always is, oh, I can help you with that. But the problem is I can't be where, you know, at midnight, I can't be in their cell saying, don't do that, or don't think that, or don't behave this way or that. So really, we just go in and we let them share, speak. And then with that, some of them will share themselves, and then another one and another one. It really is just that we really try hard not to say we'll help, because it's true. I mean, people, even a person that asked me, can you help me, give me some advice? I'm actually even more reluctant than ever anymore, because as soon as I give it, I think they aren't going to do that. I will, because that's the way I function and think, but they don't think like I do.
So they have to come to their own conclusions.
Right.
That's
they
right.
have to discover their own solution.
And so we let them in there, and then, you know, if there's a spiritual connection to this higher power, then, you know, that's what changes, helps them change.
As a matter of fact, hold those thoughts. We'll go further on that one. But I think it's about time to take a break. I'm going to ask my friend Jay over here to clock us out, pay some bills. What do you think you're going to do today there, Jay?
Yeah, good morning, Scott. Yeah, I think it's time to pay some bills. And we'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.